the David side. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Science Thursday Live.
Radio Science Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, wishing you all a happy, holy and prosperous new year. Radio Sai now brings you excerpts from a special musing talk delivered by Professor G. Venkatraman in the year of 2011. And here it is again for your listening pleasure.
At the outset, I would like to offer my humble and loving pranams at the lotus feet of our dearest Swami. Loving Sai Ram and greetings from Prashanthi Nilayam. Let me begin by wishing on behalf of all of us here in Radio Sai a Happy New Year to all of you out there in various parts of the world. For me personally, it's a great feeling to be greeting the entire world sitting here in Prashanthi. Little did I know as late as the August of 2001 that one day not far off, I would actually be able to do this, that is to say, offer greetings to the whole world. How grateful we all ought to be to Swami for enabling us to be in such close touch. These days, offering New Year greetings has not only become pretty routine ritual, but in fact a huge industry. That said, kindly remember that when Radio Sai wishes you happiness, it means that it wants you to live with God more than ever before, since it is union with God alone that can bring true happiness. I concede that what I just said was a barely concealed ad for Radio Sai, but then why not? Do we not try hard all the time to fill your day with love and joy? Today, I wish to call attention to a small piece entitled Wasting the Truth that appeared in the Times of India in its publication dated September 20, 2010. I should add that this piece is a part of a regular feature entitled City City Bang Bang, authored by one Mr. Santosh Desai. It is probably what they call a blog, with the writer commenting on various aspects of the current scene. Now, how did I happen to pick this particular piece of writing? And what was so unique about it to catch my attention? The answer to that requires first a few introductory remarks. Ever since I came to Prashanthi to make it my permanent residence, that was way back in 1992, soon after my retirement, I stopped buying newspapers. Earlier, I was an avid reader of newspapers and could not be without them even for a day. I felt so cut off. But once I came here, I found that the daily routine was so tight, I simply had to give up the newspaper reading habit without thinking about it twice. Sure, if there was a paper lying around somewhere and I had a few minutes to spare, I did not mind glancing through it. But the compulsive must-read feeling that once was so strong in me was no longer there. It was simply a question of time management. Apart from the darshan sessions, I had to prepare for the classes that I taught, besides which I had to study a lot as a junior spiritual seeker. Thus, from a regular and avid reader of newspapers, I changed to one who occasionally glanced at the headlines. And when the papers, barring a few, became filled with ads and sleazy stuff, I stopped bothering about newspapers altogether. You might wonder, that being the case, how on earth did I come to read this piece by Santosh Desai? The explanation for that might amuse you. You see, the dhobi or washerman who launders my clothes has the practice of slipping in a newspaper sheet into the shirt while folding it to keep the iron shirt stiff. By habit, I collect these pieces and store them, since there is always some need for newspaper. Having grown up in the Gandhian era, I, like most of my contemporaries, learned to be frugal and careful in not wasting things that could be reused. I'm of course nowhere near Gandhi's Himalayan standards of frugality, but there was this little habit nevertheless. Thus, every time the wash stuff was delivered, I would carefully collect these pieces of paper and fold them neatly and put them away for subsequent use as wrappers or whatever. Usually, I briefly glanced over these bits of paper just to see if there was anything interesting in them. However, since the news was almost invariably about movie stars, I did not waste time reading them in detail. Thus it was that one day a few weeks ago, I picked up a sheet of the Times of India packed into my shirt, and in it I saw this piece that I referred to. I paused and decided to glance at this piece before putting it away. As I skimmed through the piece, I realized I must cut this one and preserve it for a careful reading, because it seemed to be a window on today's world, and I was keen to know what intelligent young people in India feel these days about important social matters. From the stamp-sized photo accompanying the piece, it seemed that the writer was probably in his mid to late 40s. Obviously, he had good writing skills. He was clear in his expression, adept in packing punch and sarcasm, clever in making arguments, and no doubt caustic in his criticisms. All pluses in today's journalistic world. I'm sure you've become quite impatient with all that introductory stuff, and so let me get down to what this writer had to say. His blog was about 800 or so words long and begins as follows. Quote, "Last week, a television channel carried out a sting operation on Indian godmen, which established what some people had always suspected, that owning an alleged hotline to God comes along with certain material benefits on the side." End of quote. So that's how the writer begins. Contrary to what you might be expecting, the writer was not interested in this particular sting operation, but on such operations themselves, and goes on to say the following, quote, "The sting, as a method of uncovering truth, has gained enormously in currency in the past few years, and has served to convert into pictures what were doubts in our minds, and in doing so has provided a new way of bringing dishonesty to book." End of quote. Mr. Desai is correct. A few years ago, stings were rare and hence considered stunning. But it would seem that of late, not a day passes without some media person stinging someone or the other, somewhere or the other. That's why the writer raises the question whether stings have had any effect in curbing dishonesty in public life. Answering the question, he says, quote, "In a majority of cases, when we look back on some of the most sensational stings, we see little evidence that they had any significant long-term impact." End of quote. I'm sure that observation must come as a surprise to you. To me, at least, it certainly did. The question now becomes, if stings don't do any good, then why waste time and money on them? Is it just to grab public attention with the latest scandal and boost ratings if it's a TV channel that is involved, or improve sales if it's a newspaper or magazine that is engaged in stinging? Well, quite possibly it's the ratings game that has made stinging into an industry. Keeping that point aside, let's find out what poor Mr. Desai has to say. He continues, and I quote, "Systematic dishonesty does not get dismantled just because we become aware of it." End of quote. Well, I can agree with that, because instead of exposure of corruption causing a sense of shame and controlling the disease, the number of corruption cases being exposed has in fact increased. It reminds me of a famous French saying, "The more things change, the more they remain the same." According to Mr. Desai, what has happened is that people are gradually turning to the view that it is okay to be dishonest. To put it differently, his view seems to be that while it may perhaps be useful to have honesty as an ideal, there really is no need to take honesty seriously. Maybe I've not quite got right what Mr. Desai is trying to say, but please just consider the following remark of his, and I quote, "Society depends on the appearance of moral order rather than its actual practice. Honesty is useful in homeopathic doses, for then we consume its intention rather than its reality." End of quote. I don't know what you make of it, but to me, it seems that this gentleman seems to be saying that being occasionally and marginally honest is all that is called for in today's world. Rest of the time, we can sanctimoniously preach honesty while not being serious about it in our own lives. If you think I am in error, then please consider the following remark of the writer, also made in the same vein. Quote, "Perhaps we need to maintain the illusions about the better side of life. The more we become aware of the fact that no cow is holy and that all feet have a bit of clay in them, the easier it is to accept the dismantling of any standard of behavior." End of quote. Let us pause for a moment and try to understand what has just been quoted. Mr. Desai says, we must maintain the illusions about the better side of life. Honesty in life would, in my opinion, be one of those things that make up the better side of life. Is demanding honesty to be taken merely as an act that sustains the illusion of honesty? Is honesty not important in itself for us to clamor about its decline? To me, it seems that Mr. Desai thinks not. At least that's how I understand him. If I am right, then I am sure rattled. Considering that I just completed a long series on the Ramayana, I have to ask whether both Saint Tyagaraja, who constantly held a musical conversation with Rama, and Gandhi, who not only chanted the name of Rama all his life, but actually breathed his last chanting the name, whether these two historic and saintly figures were chasing nothing but an illusion. Let me take you back to the quote where Mr. Desai talks about holy cow, etc. Just to remind you, the essence of the quote is the following. 1. There are no holy cows. 2. All of us have feet of clay. 3. In view of the above, the simplest thing to do would be to accept the dismantling of any standard of behavior. The phrase "accept the dismantling of any standard of behavior" is from Mr. Desai. I am not certain whether Mr. Desai actually means what he says, but frankly I am terrified to hear or read such a thing. Let me explain why I say so, so that you don't feel that I have gone nuts. Now, when a person like the president of a country or judge, etc., is sworn to a high office, that person takes an oath. Similarly, officials appointed to high and responsible posts are supposed to sign a document while assuming responsibility. That this document binds them to maintaining official secrets, uphold the rule of law, truthfulness in the discharge of duties, etc., etc. These are all solemn promises meant to be taken seriously. And this custom of taking an oath or signing an oath is followed in almost all countries. Indeed, even professionals like doctors and lawyers in particular are expected to take an oath at the time of their graduation. The idea behind all this oath taking is that oaths are supposed to be taken seriously. However, if I understand correctly what Desai is saying, then oaths no longer have any meaning, the process itself being a mere routine social function, at the end of which everyone smiles, there are handshakes all round, etc. In short, it's just a photo op. If that is what oath is supposed to mean these days, then I am absolutely rattled. In earlier times, things were different. Yes, here and there one came across petty corruption and nepotism, but on the average, there was not only probity in public life, but one could also point out to any number of people in all walks of life who were utterly honest. Back then, a majority of people in India believed in the supremacy of moral law. However, in a few short decades, a lot of that seems to have changed altogether, plunging us into a topsy-turvy world, where morality has no meaning, except perhaps as a fig leaf to be used when convenient. Analysts may have detailed explanations for all this, but to me it seems that globalization, the consequent rapid economic growth, has a lot to do with the equally rapid erosion of morals. As I see it, it's all due to the eagerness and enthusiasm of people in the middle and upper class being in a tearing hurry to adopt current Western values. Lest I am misunderstood, let me make it very clear that in earlier times, people all over the world, in the East as well as the West, did have a largely common set of moral and ethical values. However, when technology began to impact life in a massive way, people found it convenient to sideline many norms of behavior accepted up to then. Since modern technology took root in the West first, dilution of morality also started there. And when the East began to catch up with the West, the same sort of moral dilution began to occur in Eastern countries also. And now, India is in the grip of this modernization fever. So you see, the problem is not with the West or the East per se, but rather in the way people get swept by attractions of modernization. I must at this point freely admit, there are many pluses in modernization. I don't deny that. At the same time, modernization also imposes a lifestyle which forces people to give up precious value systems built up over thousands of years. Thus, gone is the idea that parents must be looked after in their old age. Instead, we now have the nuclear family. And believe me, though I had studied nuclear physics and kept abreast of developments in it, until recently I simply did not know what a nuclear family meant. That might give you some idea of how rapidly change has overtaken us here. In a sense, therefore, the question before us thus becomes, can we moderate the modernization process without, shall I say, throwing the baby with the bathwater? We need to discuss that in detail, but not now, later maybe. Getting back to the issue of rapid modernization, once people began to get sucked into the world of iPhones, frequent air travel, dining out, buying the must-have, even fitment, borrowing, constantly checking emails and whatnot, they also began to lower the moral bar in one aspect of life after another. And so it has come to pass that people have begun to think that corruption is inevitable, is here to stay, is even okay to indulge in, and the only thing that is important is not to get caught. If others are caught, one must roundly condemn the culprit and lament loudly, "Oh my God, what has this country come to?" In other words, we have slowly begun to acquire the art of double standards, which is a polite phrase for hypocrisy. At this point, let me catch up with Mr. Desai, who says the following, quote, "When we start evaluating actions primarily on the basis of their effectiveness rather than their appropriateness, we create a culture of pragmatism that is assertive as well as bottomless. The opposite of dishonesty is, in all probability, not honesty but brazenness. Hypocrisy bridges the gap between who we should be and what we are." End of quote. I hope you followed that last quote carefully. As I see it, two points that Desai makes are, one, the opposite of dishonesty is brazenness, and two, hypocrisy is the best way of covering up dishonesty. Now tell me, even though our friend seems to doubt the efficacy of the virtue of honesty, would you like to live in a world bereft of honesty and integrity? Is this the kind of world you would like your children to grow up in? Before I take this further, let me take a minute off to quote for you the sentence with which Mr. Desai ends his blog. He says, quote, "The need for pretenses is our saving grace, for in doing that, we acknowledge the moral standard to which we are held. Of course, this is arbitrary and even dishonest, in that it turns a blind eye to our many failings, but it keeps the necessity of honest life." End of quote. Frankly, I am not sure if the writer is merely trying to be provocative and make us think seriously about the moral collapse that is currently engulfing us, or he is actually suggesting that the rules we have to live by should be different. In other words, maybe he is telling us, folks, the name of the game now is, might is right, corruption, cheating, looting and grabbing as big of a piece of the cake as possible is how one gets along in life, provided one can get away with it. Of course, when a person is caught, as happens once in a while, we should cry foul as loudly as possible. If you look around, that exactly is what is happening during the so-called sting operations that go on literally non-stop these days. I must add that in the West, when people are caught, the rule book is thrown at them with plenty of force. In India, on the other hand, that kind of retribution is still far away. And on the average, people seem to get away with impunity, especially when the crimes are big and the accused have deep pockets. Which probably is why Desai wonders whether stings do mean anything at all, and that at the end of it all there is just a lot of hypocrisy with people proclaiming rage, but privately shrugging the shoulders saying, well, that's how the cookie crumbles these days. What I am speaking about would not come as any news to many of you. And yet I am here trying to make a lot of noise about it. Why? That is the point I now wish to turn to. You see, the current situation is such that all of us who call ourselves devotees of Swami need to pause, take a deep breath, and reflect deeply about what we should be doing under the circumstances. The answer is clear, at least to me, and let me put it in as simple a way as possible. Suppose someone near and dear to us is in great difficulty. What would we do? We would run to help that person and do whatever we can, would we not? Well, if you agree on that, what if I say to you, dear listener, Satya and Dharma are being attacked. Should we not rush to help? Were I to say something like that, most people would immediately react and mutter, what's happening to this fellow? Has he gone bonkers? Is senility catching up? Maybe even harsher comments would be made. And let me tell you, if people were to speak like that, it would be quite normal in the ambience in which we live. Part of the reason for that is we all seem to think that it is the avatar's business to fix those problems. Has he not said so as Krishna? That would be the immediate retort to my comment. But let's go back to the example I gave. I said, if someone dear to us is in trouble, would we not rush to help? I now ask, are we trying to say that being dear applies only to friends and relatives and not to Satya and Dharma, which are truly the abstract forms of God? Do we not sing the bhajan Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma? Has not Swami himself led us on that bhajan many times in the past? Does it not mean that we should play some role in protecting Satya and Dharma instead of leaving it all to the avatar, as if he has come down on a turnkey contract and that it is his job to fix problems in the world, which after all is his creation? There are, of course, people who might say, stop talking nonsense. The problems are huge and we are insignificant. God alone can fix this problem. Leave it to him and don't interfere. They may say such things. Indeed, many do pass the buck back to God in that manner. But I ask you, if we and he are one, as we often proclaim in front of Swami, then should we also not share in the problem solving? I have run out of time today, but next time I do hope to offer some suggestions about how all of us together, we here in Prashanti and some of your dear listeners out there, could join forces and try to help. Just to boost your morale, let me draw attention to the fact that quietly over the years, the anti-Swami rhetoric has more or less disappeared. Do you know why? In part because Swami's teachings and missions have now become more and more accessible to people all over the world via various media outlets. Thus, people can see for themselves how Bhagwan is helping the poor and the needy all over the world in various ways. And how does he do it? Using ordinary people like you and me as his instruments. And how does the good word spread? Through the use of modern communication tools. So, now is a good time to join the Sai tidal wave and create a huge tsunami of love, peace, harmony and goodwill, which would make more and more people shed their fear. And who can deny fear is gripping many people these days in all parts of the world? Dear listener, Swami often says, why fear when I am here? And yet there is so much fear everywhere, fear of insecurity and so on. Why? Because people are not yet feeling his proximity in large enough numbers. And that exactly is where you and us joining forces can do a lot to bring cheer and hope everywhere, in some measure at least. Sorry if I use the provocative article to be a bit provocative myself. At least I have tried to be positive in the process, trying to show what we need to do to take the divine message further. I trust you would concede that. That's all for now, and I shall be with you again next week. Till then, all the best. As always, I offer this talk to our beloved Swami, who motivates all good actions by everyone, everywhere and all the time. Jai Sai Ram.
Tune in to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Sai Ram and New Year greetings to all our listeners from Team Radio Sai. Dear brothers and sisters, yes, He continues to shower His love and blessings on each and every one of us. And more we think of Him and His message, we definitely get closer to Him. What can be better than listening to His message in His mellifluous voice? Please immerse yourselves in the divine message clips we have to offer.
ప్రేమస్వరూపులార జీవితం ఈనాడు నూతన సంవత్సరం కనుకని నూతనంగా ఉండాలని పాతవన్నీ రోతవన్నీ ప్రకటి నెట్టి వేయాలి.
దిస్ బీయింగ్ ద న్యూ ఇయర్ భగవాన్ వాంట్స్ us టు బ్రష్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ దట్ ఇస్ పాత ద ఓల్డ్ రోత ద రాటెన్.
ఈ యొక్క డర్టీ అన్ని కూడా పారవేయాలి.
ఆల్ ది డర్టీ థింగ్స్ హావ్ గాట్ టు బి గివెన్.
పారవేస్తే కానీ నూతనమైనటువంటి భావాల లోపల ప్రవేశించవు.
దెన్ వన్స్ యు రిమూవ్ దెం యు కెన్
ఒక దైవ భావాన్ని మీరు చేర్చుకోండి, మీకు అన్ని భావాలు అందులో ఏమాత్రం ప్రవేశించడానికి వీలుండదు.
ఎంటర్టైన్, డెవలప్ ద డివైన్ థాట్స్, ద రెస్ట్ విల్ ఫాలో.
ఆ దైవత్వానికి నువ్వు చోపిస్తే
ఎవరు
ప్రవేశించరు.
Then once you give place to God, none can enter them.
అప్పుడే నీకు ధైర్యంతో శాంతి లభిస్తుంది.
Then only you will have true peace.
ప్రేమ స్వరూపులారా అందరు
కూడా
శాంతి సౌభాగ్యంగా సంతోష సదుపాయంగా జీవిస్తారని ఆశిస్తూ ఆశీర్వదిస్తున్నాను.
భగవాన్ విషెస్ ఆల్ బ్లెసెస్ ఎవ్రీబడి టు లీడ్ ద లైఫ్ ఆఫ్ పీస్ అండ్ ప్రాస్పెరిటీ ఇన్ దిస్ న్యూ ఇయర్.
ఎవ్రీథింగ్ అబౌట్ స్వామి ఇస్ సో స్వీట్ యాజ్ ఇట్ ఇస్ సెట్ మధురాధిపతే అఖిలం మధురం. We at Radio Sai hope these divine messages inspire you all into a happy and holy new year as they have been inspiring us all through.
Sing thy glory to praise.
it is hard. We will keep thy holy life every moment, day and night. Every soul will feel thy light, thy love and light. Sing thy glory to praise the Lord. Sing thy story to spread.
Greetings to all our listeners from Team Radio Sai. Dear brothers and sisters, we pray that your year ahead is full of Sai grace, guidance and blessings. May Bhagwan bless you and everyone in the universe with his love and compassion. Let us begin this year with a few important reminders from Bhagwan Baba, our Lord Sai.
Premaswarupulara జీవితంలో ఈనాడు నూతన సంవత్సరం కనుకనే నూతనంగా ఉండాలని పాతవన్నీ రోతవన్నీ పక్కకు నెట్టి వేయాలి.
This being the new year, Bhagwan wants us to brush off all that is pata, the old, rota, the rotten.
ఈ యొక్క గట్టివన్నీ కూడా పారవేయాలి.
All the dirty things have got to be gone.
పారవేస్తే కానీ నూతనమైనటువంటి భావాల లోపల ప్రవేశించవు.
When once you remove them, you
ఒక దైవ భావాన్ని మీరు చేర్చుకోండి, మీకు అన్ని భావాలు అందులో ఏమాత్రం ప్రవేశించడానికి వీలు ఉండదు.
Entertain, develop the divine thoughts, the rest will follow.
ఆ దైవత్వానికి మీరు చోటిస్తే ఎవరూ ప్రవేశించరు.
Then once you give place to God, none can enter them.
అప్పుడే మీకు ధైర్యంతో శాంతి లభిస్తుంది.
Then only you will have true peace.
ప్రేమస్వరూపులారా అందరు
కూడాను
శాంతి సౌభాగ్యంగా సంతోష సదుపాయంగా జీవిస్తారని ఆశిస్తూ ఆశీర్వదిస్తున్నాను.
భగవాన్ విషస్ ఆల్ బ్లెసెస్ ఎవ్రీబడి టు లీడ్ ద లైఫ్ ఆఫ్ పీస్ అండ్ ప్రాస్పెరిటీ ఇన్ దిస్ న్యూ ఇయర్.
లవింగ్ సాయిరామ్ ఫ్రమ్ ఆల్ ఆఫ్ అస్ అట్ టీమ్ రేడియో సాయి ఇన్ ప్రశాంత్ నిలయం, ఇండియా.